Chapter 3. The next week seemed awfully long. The only time I really hated school was during the springtime, particularly in May, when the birds were busy nesting on the prairies. This May week, what with thinking about Owl and sitting by the open window sniffing the smells of springtime, I wished school had never been invented. Every recess and after school, Murray and Bruce and I talked about the young owls and tried to think of a way to get them out of their nest. Murray suggested we should cut down the tree, but that was too dangerous because the young owls might be hurt. Bruce said he might get his father to come and shoot the old owl, so it would be safe for us to climb the tree, but that wasn't fair. The only thing I could think of was firecrackers. My idea was to get some small skyrockets and let them off under the nest to scare the mother owl away. The trouble was that we had no money, and anyway, the storekeepers wouldn't sell skyrockets to kids our age. Then on Friday night, we had a storm of the kind called a Chinook. Chinooks come down out of the Rocky Mountains in Alberta, and sometimes they blow right across Saskatchewan, and they blow like fury. Lying in my bed on Friday night, I could hear branches snapping off the poplar trees along the riverbank. The rain was pelting on the roof so hard it scared Mutt, who always slept on my bed, and made him howl. I had to pull a quilt over his head to make him keep quiet. He hated storms. I worried about the young owls for a long time before I finally fell asleep. Early on Saturday morning, Murray called for me and we met Bruce at the railroad bridge. It was a fine morning and the sun kept popping in and out between the white clouds that were racing across the sky, trying to catch up with the Chinook. Everything was steaming from all the rain and the prairie was soggy wet. We hurried across the fields and didn't care if our feet did get soaked, because we were worried about the owls. When we were still quite away from Owl Bluff, Bruce gave a shout. "Lucky," he yelled, "old Mr. Miller's blind is gone." Sure enough, six or seven of the biggest cottonwoods were snapped right off at the tops. As for Mr. Miller's blind, it had been blown clean out of its tree, and nobody ever did find it again. But the worst thing was the owl's nest. The rain and wind had smashed it to pieces, and all that was left was a stick or two stuck to the crotch where the nest had been. There was no sign of the old owl at all, but on the ground near the foot of the tree were two young owls, and they were cold and dead. They were so young they'd grown only about half their feathers, and baby down was still sticking to them all over. I don't know whether they were killed by the fall or not, but they were as wet as sponges, and I think they probably died from being so wet and cold all night long. We felt miserable as could be, and all we could think to do was to have a funeral for the little owls. Bruce had his jackknife with him, and he started to dig a grave, while Murray and I went looking for the right kind of sticks to use for crosses. There was a big pile of brush nearby, and I happened to give it a kick in passing. Something went snap, snap, snap from under it. I shoved my hand under the brush and touched a bundle of wet feathers. Bruce and Murray came over and we pulled the brush away. There was the missing owlet, the third one that had been in the nest, and he was still alive. He was bigger than the other two, and that was probably because he was the first one to hatch. Horned owls are funny that way. They begin to lay their eggs in March when it's still winter on the prairie. The eggs are laid a few days apart. But from the time the first one is laid, the mother has to start setting. If she waited until she had a full clutch of eggs, the early ones would be chilled and would never hatch. The first egg that's laid hatches first, and that young owl gets a 4 or 5 day head start on the next one, who in turn gets a head start on the next one. The one we found must have been the first to hatch, because he was not only bigger than the others, but he must have been a lot stronger, too. When the nest blew apart and he fell to the ground, he was able to wiggle under the brush pile for shelter, and that probably saved his life. He was about as big as a chicken, and you could see his grown-up feathers pushing through the baby down. He even had the beginnings of two horn feathers growing out of his head. A surprising thing about him was that he was almost pure white, with only small black markings on the ends of his feathers. When we found him, he looked completely miserable, because all of his down and feathers were stuck together in clumps, and he was shivering like a leaf. I thought he'd be able to feel like fighting, but when I tried to pick him up, he hunched forward and spread his wings and he hissed at me. It was a good try, but he was too weak to keep it up, and he fell right over on his face. I was still a little bit afraid of him, because his claws were long and sharp, and his beak, which he kept snapping, seemed big enough to bite off my finger. But he did look so wet and sad that after a while I stopped being afraid. I got down on my knees in front of him and very slowly put my hand on his back. He hunched down as if he thought I was going to hurt him. But when I didn't hurt, he stopped hissing and lay still. He felt as cold as ice. I took off my shirt and put it over him, and then I picked him up as carefully as I could, and I carried him out of the bluff so he could sit in the sunshine and get dry and warm again. It was surprising how fast he started to get better. In half an hour his feathers were dry, and he was standing up and looking around. Murray had brought along some roast beef sandwiches for lunch. He took some meat out of the sandwiches and held it out to the owl. The owl seemed to look at him in a minute, with its head on one side. Then it gave a funny little hop and came close enough to snatch the meat out of Murray's fingers. It gave a couple of gulps, blinked its eyes once, and the meat was gone. He was certainly a hungry owl. He ate all the meat we had and most of the bread as well. When I found some dead mice that his mother must have left on the edge of the nest, and which had also been blown to the ground, the owl ate them too. They must have been hard to swallow because he ate them whole. But he got them down somehow. After that, we were friends. When Bruce and I started to walk away from him, just to see what he'd do, the owl followed right along behind us like a dog. He couldn't fly, of course, and he couldn't walk any too well either. He kind of jumped along, but he stayed right with us all the same. I think he knew he was an orphan, and that if he stayed with us, we'd look after him. When I sat down again, he came up beside me, and after taking a sideways look into my face, he hopped up on my leg. I was afraid his claws would go right through my skin, but they didn't hurt at all. He was being very careful. "Guess he's your owl, all right," Bruce said, and I could see he was a little jealous. "No, sir, Bruce," I replied. "He can live at my place, but he's going to be our owl, all three of us." We left him sitting in the sun by the haversacks, and then we buried the other two little owls and had a funeral over them. After that, we were ready to go home. We decided the best way to carry our new pet was to put him in my haversack. He didn't like it much, but after a struggle, we managed to stuff him into it. We left his head sticking out so he could see where he was going. Mutt, and Bruce's dogs Rex, hadn't been with us that morning. I think the two of them had gone off cat hunting before we got up. But as we were walking along the sidewalk in front of my house, we met old Mutt coming back from wherever he'd been. Mutt was cross-eyed and short-sighted, and he never could see any too well. He came up to me to say hello, wagging his long tail and sniffing me, and then suddenly he smelled owl. I don't think he knew exactly where he smelled, what it was he smelled, because he had never been so close to an owl before. But he knew he smelled something strange. I stood there trying not to laugh while he sniffed all around me. He snuffed my trousers, and then he began to sniff the haversack. When his nose was nearly in the owl's face, the bird opened its beak and snapped it shut again, right on the end of poor old Mutt's black nose. Mutt gave a yelp, and you could have heard it a mile away, and he went loping off to hide his hurt feelings under the garage. We put the owl in the summer house, and when Dad got home from work, the owl was sitting on an orange crate, watching the gophers running around on the floor below him. It kept him busy. His head kept turning one way and then the other, until it looked as if he was going to unscrew it right off his shoulders. He didn't know what to make of the gophers because he'd never seen a live one before, but he was certainly interested in them. "Better count your gophers, Billy," said my father. "I have an idea they may start disappearing. By the way, what do you call your owl?" I hadn't thought of a name for him until that moment, but now one just popped into my head. I remembered Christopher Robin's owl in Winnie the Pooh. "His name is Wall," I said, and Wall he was forever after.